You're tuned in to the Kojo Namdi Show on WAMU 88.5. Welcome. Later in the broadcast, we explore how personal storytelling can transform care for local Alzheimer's patients. But first, despite a veto from the governor and widespread Republican opposition, a bill that increases Maryland's dependence on renewable energy will become law. Joining us to explore what it means for the region is Mike Tidwell. He is the director of the Chesapeake Climate Action Network. He joins us in studio. Mike, thank you. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Kojo.
Joining us by phone is Trent Kittleman. Trent Kittleman is a Republican member of the Maryland House of Delegates representing Carroll and Howard counties. Trent Kittleman, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Kojo.
If you have questions or comments for us, give us a call at 800-433-8850. Do you think there should be greater dependence on renewable energy in our region? 800-433-8850. Mike, through this legislation, Maryland set a faster timeline for its use of renewable energy. 25% of the state's electricity must come from renewable sources like wind or solar power by the year 2020. Your organization led a campaign in support of this change. Why do you think this is a good thing for the state of Maryland?
Well, for the last 10 years, we've had a version of this policy going back to Republican Governor Bob Ehrlich, who signed it into law in 2004 to begin mandating a certain level of wind and solar power as part of our utility mix of electricity. And we now have 10 years of data showing it's created thousands of jobs, billions of dollars in net economic growth. These are numbers according to the Hogan administration itself. And so the General Assembly decided it was time to expand this in the face of rising seas and more climate change from our old, dirty, outdated energy sources like coal and frack gas and oil. The General Assembly said, let's have more clean energy, more jobs, more economic growth.
Does Maryland's new renewable energy standard mean anything for the rest of the region? D.C., Virginia?
Well, we have one shared airshed, so it will help clean the air for everybody in Northern Virginia and across much of Virginia and D.C. It's especially helpful to Baltimore, however, where, for example, Baltimore has one of the highest rates of premature deaths by infants from poor air quality. Most of the state still lives in areas considered unsafe in terms of clean air by the American Lung Association. So it will clean our air and will bring lots of health benefits to the whole region.
Delegate Kittleman, you voted against this renewable energy law. What do you think it will mean for Maryland?
I don't think there's anybody, and as you said, it was Governor Ehrlich who originally started working toward cleaner air, that doesn't want our environment to be as clean as possible with balancing the alternative efforts that the state has to make. And one of the things that has always bothered me is that when we take on one of these challenges, we tend to exacerbate and exaggerate it forever. We never look back to see how have we done so far. There's a report in Maryland 2016 Clean Air Progress Report that shows for the first time in 30 years, Maryland is very close to meeting all federal air quality standards. And it goes on to show the difference and the decrease in the ozone level. And I have no desire to stop doing that. But whenever you try to do something through legislation, my goal is, will it work and what will it actually do, not what does it sound good? And this bill is not going to really help Maryland other than creating a great deal of cost. The Public Service Commission report talked about the fact that the aggregated cost of compliance with the Maryland program for credits, which is the only way we can meet these goals, has increased, and they use the word exponentially since 2011, from $14.7 million in 2011 to $126.7 million in 2015. That's not insignificant to the people of Maryland because, and one more thing I'll say before I stop, but there was a testimony on the floor of the House that there is a report that was done by the United Way looking at the people of Maryland and finding that there is a category of people called asset-limited, income-constrained employed. That acronym is ALICE. That means they're working and they can't meet their needs. 35% of the people in this state are in that category. And when you come to balancing the needs of two different important goals, in my opinion, raising that rate again, costing more money to the people and to the businesses in Maryland.
To be clear, you seem to be making
our money out to other states.
To be clear, you seem to be making two points. One is that the legislation that was passed under previous Governor Bob Ehrlich is working. So if it ain't broke, no need to fix it.
Well, we also increased the goal to have 20% by 2020, and the bill this time moves it up to 25%. And there's just no data to show that asking for that additional 5%.
The second point you seem to
help create new jobs or anything else, because people are rushing to create jobs, as the gentleman said, and that minor increase isn't going to do anything but cost us more money.
The second point you seem to be making is precisely that, costing us more money. Mike Tidwell, a central debate between those who support and those who oppose this bill is the cost to residents.
That is probably, for my constituents and a great deal of Maryland, a significant fact, because that's the reason that Governor Hogan won, and he hasn't increased cost and fees to...
Let me raise the same question with Mike Tidwell. How much will this new renewable energy standard cost the average person living in Maryland, Mike Tidwell?
It's not going to be...
Allow him to respond, please.
Governor Hogan vetoed a bill that was enormously popular in Maryland. Over 70% of Marylanders supported this bill. The General Assembly overrode his veto by huge margins, and that's precisely because we are getting more economic benefit from these policies to mandate wind and solar than we are any kind of downsize. There was one economic study that was done on this bill that showed that passing this bill would lead to a 58 cent per month additional investment from average ratepayers. That's not counting avoiding asthma for your kids and missing work days because your kid has to stay home with asthma. It's not accounting for climate change impacts. It's just a straight measurement. And that's in addition to creating thousands of jobs. I'm glad that Delegate Kittleman said, let's look at the facts, because the Hogan administration in October of 2015 put out a report precisely on this policy, and their own data, you can look it up, the Maryland Climate Action Plan of October 2015 says that this policy has created billions of dollars in net economic activity in Maryland and created thousands of jobs. And in fact, on the day that Hogan vetoed this bill back in May, the solar industry released a statement that said this veto puts thousands of solar jobs and hundreds of local companies at risk. This is what the governor did.
We're talking renewable energy in Maryland. In case you're just joining us, that's Mike Tidwell. He is the director of the Chesapeake Climate Action Network. Joining us by phone is Trent Kittleman. She's a Republican member of the Maryland House of Delegates representing Carroll and Howard counties. You can call us at 800-433-8850. You can send email to kojo@wamu.org. Shoot us a tweet at Kojo Show, or go to our website, kojoshow.org. Join the conversation there. How quickly do you think the region should move towards renewable energy? Do you think renewable energy puts a financial burden on taxpayers? 800-433-8850. Delegate Kittleman, Republican Governor Larry Hogan, and the Maryland GOP mounted an aggressive campaign against what the governor dubbed a sunshine tax, even creating a website that allowed Marylanders to send emails opposing the bill to lawmakers. Ultimately, the vote went down along party lines.
It was not an overwhelming defeat. The fact is, in the legislature today, the Democrats can pass anything that they want to pass because they have a veto-proof majority. So, that makes it very difficult, but it was certainly not an overwhelming vote in any way, shape, or form. And the argument that the gentleman just made is the thing that really frustrates me, because this issue, I understand that when Republicans say, don't do this, there is a thing, Republicans don't want to, spend any money, Republicans don't want to clean the environment, and all those terrible things that we are accused of doing. That's no longer and not true. But the fact is that the facts that exist are ignored. I just read from the report that shows the air that has been cleaned in Maryland. It is not to the level that is creating the kinds of problems that were talked about on the floor of the House. And the fact that you can quantify this as 58 cents or whatever small amount of dollars and cents is in a way irrelevant, because our last governor passed 40 taxes and 80 tax and fee increases. And incrementally, every single one of these makes it more difficult for the family.
What I'm concerned about, Delegate Kittleman, what I'm concerned about here is the partisanship. From what I've been reading in the Baltimore Sun, there were at least four Republican delegates who voted for the bill when it passed with 92 votes last year. After the governor vetoed it, apparently four of those Republicans flipped their votes and decided to vote against it. Why was that?
One of those people spoke on the floor and explained exactly why he did change his votes. And sometimes it has to do simply with taking the time and effort to really understand what a bill does. I'm not even on this committee that went through it. But when you go and look at everything that it does, you look at what exists and really study the whole issue, you see that this incremental increase is not going to increase the number of jobs. The solar companies and the others, they're already struggling to get as much land as they can to build out as much as they can because they have a market here. Pushing that market up another 5% doesn't add any incentive to those companies. And one other thing that I really want to point out, because money is an issue that's important to a lot of people, but there are other issues that we don't ever look at, and that is the whole issue of clean energy. Sometimes you hate things such as coal-burning furnaces so much, which is not unreasonable, that you don't look at the problems that may be created when you move to something else. Not that they're insolvable, but they ought to be taken into account, which dictates going not slowly, but not this fast. And one of the things that was pointed out on the solar energy, they are rushing to buy up farmland. The farmers are making money, but they have found out they are very much against it. We are trying to preserve farmland. What happens is they build a field full of solar panels. They compress the earth, which is a sort of a semi-impervious surface. We just had the rain tax that was supposed to prevent the problems that come from pervious surfaces. And now we're doing things that are going to, in some ways, harm the environment, harm the ecology. There is also, even with windmills, you have issues.
Well, allow me to have Mike Tidwell respond.
Well, I think it's clear that Governor Larry Hogan vetoed this bill just for ideological purposes. Unfortunately, Governor Hogan is resembling more in terms of energy policy. And I think as a Marylander, I think it's important that other Marylanders understand this. His energy policies and climate change policies really increasingly are starting to resemble the Trump administration.
Well, wait a second. Governor Larry Hogan vetoed the renewable energy bill, but he's pushed forward a $65 million environmental agenda over the next 3 years that includes job training and a Green Energy Institute at the University of Maryland. Still, you have referred to him as anti-environmental. Why?
Yeah, I think the governor's policies are basically anti-environmental, and I'll tell you why. He's not only out of step with average voters in the state of Maryland, he's out of step with other Republican governors. Rick Snyder of Michigan just signed a clean electricity standard increase in that state. Governor John Kasich of Ohio supports these sort of policies. Republican governors throughout the country are doing this. And again, the original governor who signed the original policy for clean electricity in Maryland was Bob Ehrlich. So Governor Hogan is out of step with his own party nationally. In terms of his $65 million in money that he spent for an environmental initiative, what's really interesting about that, Kodjo, is Governor Hogan did not talk to a single major environmental leader in Maryland in shaping that program. You would think that if he was going to propose environmental policies for the state of Maryland, he'd talk to environmental leaders. He did not. And that $65 million that he's proposing for environmental initiatives, $41 million of it came from a merger between BG&E and Exelon in 2012 that Governor Martin O'Malley, the former governor, negotiated and secured that $40 million for clean energy development. So two-thirds of that money that Governor Hogan's taking credit for actually came from his predecessor.
Delegate Kittleman, what do you say to someone who calls the governor or even Maryland's Republican Party as a whole anti-environmental?
That's my problem with the level of discourse these days, is here we are supposed to be talking about a particular bill. Does this bill do what it purports to do? And instead, I'm hearing a whole lot of, oh, we have to clean the environment, these general propositions, which is why the public is always in favor of it, because they are convinced that we are all going to die from asthma or something if we don't pass every bill that has a title on it, instead of focusing on what does this bill actually do? Does it work? Will it actually increase the number of jobs? How much money are we sending out of state? How does it work? We're not really increasing the amount of clean energy that's produced in our state by very much. We're working on it, and that's a good thing. But most of the money is going out of state to buy credits and support jobs in other states. And all of that, I'm not saying that that's all bad, because what we're doing now is very similar. But for this particular bill and this time, it is the wrong approach. And that's what I would hope we would actually focus on and talk about, why we need to kick up this.
Got to take a short break. We will address that issue when we come back. We'll continue our conversation on renewable energy in Maryland, a conversation you can join by calling 800-433-8850. Do you think renewable energy puts a financial burden on taxpayers? Do you consider the environment a partisan issue? 800-433-8850 or send email to kojo@wamu.org. I'm Kojo Namdi.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
It's news,
culture, and curiosities.
From the district, Tacoma Park,
Alexandria,
Friendship Heights,
Hyattsville,
Falls Church,
Northeast Washington, D.C., in your inbox every weekday afternoon.
DCS Daily.
Sign up at dcs.com/newsletter.
dcs.com/newsletter.
Welcome back. We're talking about a new renewable energy law in Maryland with Trent Kittleman. She is a Republican member of the Maryland House of Delegates representing Carroll and Howard counties. And Mike Tidwell, he is the director of the Chesapeake Climate Action Network. We got an email from Fred who says, can your guest respond to the Audubon Society claims that wind turbines kill thousands of birds, many more than pollution? Mike Tidwell?
Well, there's no such thing as a perfect energy source. And is wind power perfect? No, it's not. But it doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be a lot better than mountaintop removal for coal, which is how we get a large share of our electricity in Maryland right now, which is why the General Assembly passed this clean electricity bill that the governor vetoed in the first place. Wind power, the national statistics on utility scale wind turbines is that about 2 birds per year per turbine strike these turbines. So that's a very small number, actual impacts on birds. The biggest threat to birds worldwide, and I'm a birder, I've been a birder most of my life, the biggest threat to bird populations worldwide is climate change, changing habitat from climate change. And that's why we need to move to clean renewable energy. And that's why wind power and solar will lead the way on that.
Can I respond?
Please do, yes.
Actually, there is an argument as to how many birds are killed. I think it is a real problem. However, there's another issue, and that is the nature of the birds themselves. There was a 4-year study done by Dr. Sean Smallwood of California's Alamont Pass Wind Farm. It kills an average of 116 golden eagles annually, or about 2,900 since the facility was built. And eagles aren't the only victims they found in the study. And it says, and I quote, an average of 300 red-tailed hawks, 333 American kestrels, and 380 burrowing owls were killed annually, plus even more non-raptors. Now, well, I don't know what that means.
That study is outdated, and if you were to calculate the amount of bird habitat lost to mountaintop removal, these are basically our choices. Mountaintop removal for coal to keep the lights on, or do we switch to rooftop solar and correctly sited wind farms? If you put the wind farms in the right location with input from environmental leaders, and again, it would be great if Governor Hogan would consult environmental leaders when he proposes environmental initiatives. He does not. But there's abundant data showing that if you put the wind farms in the right locations off the shore of Maryland or in appropriately sited places in the lower eastern shore and elsewhere, you're going to have microscopically small impacts of birds versus just taking the tops off mountains and completely destroying habitat for raptors of the kind you're talking about.
Delegate, go ahead.
Yes, if you also mentioned solar on rooftops, I will tell you, I had Solar City out here three times trying to get solar panels on my rooftop. I have a fairly large house. They couldn't do it. So it isn't that simple, and that does not produce that amount of electricity. And I will also comment on the offshore wind. In 2013, I was working with Senator Pipkin, who became an absolute expert on offshore wind production of energy. And the findings on its economic feasibility were absolutely abysmal. In fact, it upset him so much that that bill passed, and some of the other things that happened that year, that he actually left the legislature. There's always two stories, and I just hope that people understand that when someone says this bill is not the right one,
I'm glad you raised that point, because that's what.
And I don't believe that Governor Hogan did not talk with any environmental experts.
He didn't talk to me. He didn't talk to any environmental leader I know of.
Well, maybe you don't know the environmental leaders that he does talk with.
Here is Reva in Montgomery County. Reva, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Ms. Kidwell. I know that climate change, I've been looking into it, and it's a serious, serious problem. I have six grandchildren, and it's going to be staring them in the face. And how severe it is going to be depends on what we do now. So if you don't like this bill, what are your solutions to have us using way less fossil fuels? Because you're right, we're not using enough solar, we're not using enough wind, and I'm afraid that environmentalists aren't going to be too fond of the idea of nuclear, though that might be a saving type of thing. What do you suggest? What are your bills or your proposal?
I think you're right that nuclear provides 40% of the energy in the state right now, and I realize people are nervous about that. Again, I think that we need to calm down, and I realize that your fears, I have fears for my grandkids. It's more about the fact that they're going to all go broke if we don't do something about the debt. But we do fear for what's going to happen to the kids in the future. And I looking at the reports of that the air quality in Maryland has improved, I think that the market has got to support these renewable energy sources, and it's starting to. I think that we have encouraged solar and we have encouraged wind, and I think that they are building, and they will continue to build out. My objection to this particular bill is that adding another 5% as an incentive isn't going to be an incentive to anything that is not already being done, and it is just going to cause us to spend more money out of state and cost taxpayers of Maryland more.
Need to move on.
I like what we're doing, and I like what the governor has projected, but we have to have a measure. We can't simply say we need to do more. There has to be a measure. What is our goal? Where do we want to get to?
Mike Tidwell, the General Assembly recently granted Attorney General Brian Frosch sole discretion to sue the Trump administration without the consent of the governor. Do you foresee him using that power to sue over the issue of environmental standards?
I do. I think that Attorney General Brian Frosch is going to use that new power appropriately. 80% of other states, I believe, already allow their attorney generals to have this power. I think this issue gets to the core of what we're talking about, because Governor Larry Hogan, by all indications, I've met him, others say he's a really nice guy. Personally, it's understandable that his popularity ratings are fairly solid. But when you scratch the surface and you look at his policies, especially on environmental issues and especially climate change and clean energy, you see policies that more generally represent what President Trump has been talking about. President Trump talks about wind turbines and birds with no evidence. President Trump says we're going to bring back, quote-unquote, quote, beautiful coal. And Delegate Kittleman herself supports Donald Trump. She said in an op-ed that she wrote, quote, the election of Donald Trump may very well be the last best hope of preserving this country. That is why Attorney General Brian Frosch needs the power to resist the kind of policies that Delegate Kittleman and Larry Hogan and President Trump want to bring on the environment, on climate change.
Delegate Kittleman.
And I'm perfectly happy to. I do support President Trump very strongly. I know that that surprises a lot of people, including even my daughter, because I look at what people do more than what they say. And I wish he hadn't said some of the silly, hurtful things he did during the campaign. But I like what he's doing, and I think that it's going to be make this country a better place.
Delegate Kittleman.
I don't think that we need, again, the gentleman didn't answer my question, which is, what is our goal? If the goal is to have perfect environment, that's wrong.
Well, certainly our goal is not to have Donald Trump dictate more coal use in our state.
Tell me what it is. What is your goal? What are the measurables? How can we tell whether we achieved it?
The goal that the governor himself has said that he embraces, but then he vetoes policies to get there, the goal is to reduce overall greenhouse gas emissions in the state of Maryland 40% by the year 2030. That is a law in Maryland, to reduce those greenhouse gases. The governor himself signed that bill. But then when it comes time to take action on it, he vetoes it. And then more of a Trump line and anti-wind and pro-coal and pro-fracking. Governor Hogan wants to frack as well in the state of Maryland, which is wildly unpopular.
Delegate Kittleman, what's different in the state of Maryland? Maryland first passed legislation putting into place requirements for use of renewable energy back in 2004. What was the political climate back then, and how have the requirements played out in the state in the 10-plus years since? There seems to be have a little bit more of across the aisle comedy back in those days?
I don't think so. I think that that a lot of the Republicans that I know are very strongly, and most of them, are very strongly in favor. How can you not be in favor? They want the environment to be clean. But life is imperfect, and there are competing interests for every single thing government does. You cannot be a one-issue person if you are a legislator. All I am asking is that we have a goal. The goal is up to 40-40. He's saying that this bill to push it to 25 is an essential part of getting to that goal. I simply don't believe that's true. I think we're on our way. I think we need to have ways to have measurable progress. Why don't we sit down and find out what do we want it to be in each different year? Rather than passing a law that doesn't deal with reality, put into place the goals you intend to see, and then if you don't meet those goals, then we can talk about a law.
Let's see if Mike Tidwell wants to go even farther. D.C. has an even higher requirement in place than Maryland. The city council unanimously passed a bill in late June that requires the district to get 50% of its electricity from renewable energy by the year 2032. Mike Tidwell, would you like to see Maryland go that far, maybe even to 100% renewable energy?
I think the whole country is going to move to 100% clean electricity much faster than people realize. We've got cost-competitive electric cars coming on the market. Wind power, the price keeps falling. Solar panels, the price is falling dramatically. And that's why the D.C. Council voted unanimously and Mayor Bowser signed a bill in July that commits the city of D.C. to 50% clean electricity over the next. And we're going to get there in about 15 years. Policy actually joins California, Massachusetts, Hawaii, and some other leading states in moving toward more affordable, clean, renewable power. And basically what we're doing is states like D.C. and Maryland are getting away from the old, outdated, and dirty energy that President Trump and Delegate Kittleman want to continue to have us use. The only way to get off of mountaintop removal
that?
For coal,
did
but
I
the only way to use less coal
power?
And frack gas, the
only
way to use
your turn next, Delegate Kittleman.
The only way to use less coal and to avoid fracking in the state of Maryland, and my concern is Governor Hogan would like to start permitting fracking at the end of this year in Western Maryland. The only way to prevent that is to move toward electricity and other energy that does not involve fossil fuels, period.
Delegate Kittleman, you got the last word. We're almost out of time. You can also add what your opinion is of the legislative effort to ban fracking in Maryland.
The D.C. doesn't have to worry. Their bills are paid by the federal government. California is nearing bankruptcy. You know, all of these things sound wonderful, but there is a reality on the amount of resources that this country and each state has All I am asking is that we look at it from a rational perspective and we have a goal instead of simply saying, do more, do more, do more, do more. We keep putting money into things. Well, I won't go into that, but no. Fracking produces natural gas, which is a fairly clean energy source. One other thing that I will add is these clean energy sources are not simply solar and wind. The ones that are included, of course, hydroelectric, which is a good thing. We have the Conowingo Dam, but we also have things like burning waste, burning chicken poultry litter, burning black liquor, which is from the pulp of papers. A lot of things are included in that category that people are not aware of. And well, the results of that are things that we really haven't talked about or looked at. I just think it's important.
We're just about out of time, but D.C. activists would like you to know that D.C.'s bills are, in fact, paid by D.C. taxpayer dollars. They are not, in fact, paid by the federal government. Trent Kittleman is a Republican member of the Maryland House of Delegates representing Carroll and Howard counties. Mike Tidwell is the director of the Chesapeake Climate Action Network. Thank you both for joining us. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we explore how personal storytelling can transform care for local Alzheimer's patients. I'm Kojo Nand.
WAMU 88.5 is your listener-supported NPR news station in the greater Washington, D.C. region. You can support the Kojo Namdi Show and all the regional coverage you value by becoming a member today. Click the donate button at WAMU.org, and thanks.